With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Stephen Clark. Find me on Twitter at Stephen Clark CFC. I'm an Australian fan, trying to enjoy the World Cup as best I can.
And I'm James Vickers, stepping up to the sort of the main show for the first time, so quite nervous. You can catch me on the Championship Roundtable podcast each week during the season, and you can reach me on my personal Twitter, which is @_JamesVickers.
Yes, Stephen, nice to have you back on, James, as you said. Very nice to have you on for the first time. We're going to lead in because today, as we record, of course, there have been a couple of big upsets. Germany lose to Mexico, then Brazil end up drawing against Switzerland. This is not the first day in which there have been a couple surprises. Obviously, Argentina's draw with Iceland was a shock to some, and then Spain and Portugal drew each other. Obviously, not really a loser there, quote-unquote, or literally, because it was a draw. But the main point here is that a lot of the teams that were favorites, were kind of heralded as these Goliaths that were just going to sweep their way through the tournament, have not done that thus far. Do you think this is more credit to the smaller teams for having a good game plan, or do you think it's more of a detraction from these sides that were supposed to be so incredible as we headed into Russia 2018?
It's kind of been a bit of a mixture, to be honest, in both. I think that first of all, you've got to look at the tactics some of these teams play. I think that the coaching standard in the international game isn't all that great. I think that you tend to, with these national teams, get a bunch of really good players who get chucked together and can't really perform just because they have too much reliance on one player, in Argentina's case especially. And then they just tend to falter, and a well-organized team like Iceland, who a lot of these guys know each other, they know what they're doing, they're really compact, they just tend to be able to hold them off better. Also just think that this is a really tight World Cup in terms of talent anyway. I think that there's no kind of clear front runner really. So I think that we're going to see a lot of these games going forward. Actually, I think it's going to be pretty tight.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Stephen. I think definitely you only have to look at the Germany-Mexico game today. I think quite a lot of the sort of, I hate using the term lesser nations because everyone deserves to be there on merit, but I think a lot of the sort of less fancied nations is sort of the way I'd put it. Sort of catching up, I think, is the best way to put it. Obviously, with the sort of the main five leagues in Europe now having, you know, a wide array of players playing for them, you know, Mexico, probably go back sort of 10 years or so, you know, you wouldn't really recognize many of the Mexican players in the national team. And, you know, now you've got the household names of Chicharito, Irving Lozano from PSV, you know, really sort of shone today. And I think the lesser teams are less afraid to have a go at the so-called big teams now. And I think Mexico definitely, sort of to point on to today's game, have seen the way, you know, the likes of Argentina have dropped points. And, you know, for rather than playing, been content with finishing third, having a sort of, to say for them, a decent World Cup, they thought, you know, why not have a go and sort of see where that can take them. And I think, you know, it's no surprise really with sort of the increase in sort of marquee players coming from these nations, you know, the likes of Mexico, Colombia, Iceland to some extent, that they're, you know, now starting to have a go and you know, look really good, to be honest. I think Mexico and Iceland especially, albeit Iceland did sit back quite a bit, but you know, most teams would when you come up against a strike force of Messi and Aguero, you know, look really solid. And I think definitely as the course of the World Cup goes on, I think, you know, we're only sort of just getting around the first round of games, but I think, you know, going into this second round of games, there's going to be even more upsets to come.
Yeah, I think those are some excellent points made by both of you. And it is exciting to see these matches where you kind of expect one team to just stomp the other and to kind of lose interest, that there do tend to be some really interesting kind of tactic and heart versus talent matchups. I mean, obviously, that's a lot, that's very reductive, but it has been very fascinating thus far. Obviously, Argentina is one of those teams that struggled against Iceland, as you both mentioned. And then that brings it back to Messi, unfortunately. Why do you guys think that he struggles in crucial pressurized moments for Argentina when he seems to thrive on them so well for his club, which of course is Barcelona?
Well, personally, my personal take on the Messi debate is that I think that he's just not the same kind of character that Maradona is. And I think that's always his biggest problem with when it comes to Argentina. I think that Maradona is the kind of guy that, you know, you watch the replays of the 86 World Cup and you see he just pretty much carried the team on his back. While I think Messi, undoubtedly, in my opinion, is the greatest player of all time, I just don't think he's that kind of player that can pick up a team completely and just carry them. Like, and I think that he can be kind of crowded out of a game by 11 like big Icelandic defenders, you know. And I think that Ronaldo is much more of that kind of talismanic figure, whereas I think Messi has kind of always benefited from being like the kind of front piece of a really intricate team. And I think that Argentina have placed, I just think that there's so much unnecessary weight put on Messi's shoulders when you look at that squad. There's so much talent there. I think that it kind of gets to him. I just think from maybe not a mentality standpoint, because obviously playing at the very highest level of the game, you've got to have an absolutely wonderful mentality. But I don't know, when it comes to these Argentina games, I just think that you see it really wanes on him. And you're watching that game yesterday with Iceland and Argentina, and for me, I just saw him every time he was doing so well. He was bringing the ball into the box, playing 1-2s to people like Aguero. And then you just see Di Maria just standing completely still, coming inside, taking the space. And I don't know. I personally am finding it quite hard to place it on Messi's shoulders. I know. Obviously, missing the penalty doesn't help his case there. And with Ronaldo playing so well, the debate's going to come up. You know, the best player of all time. Who's the better out of the two? But for me, it's I don't know. His struggles for Argentina reflect more for me the weaknesses of Argentina more than it says about Messi.
I completely agree with the point you made there, Stephen. I think, you know, there is that over-reliance on Messi where players like Dybala, Di Maria, Aguero should have more focus on them. I think if Messi was playing, I don't know, say for a team like Poland and you're Robert Lewandowski, it's easy to point the finger on him. He is that genuine world-class player that they have. Whereas, you know, Argentina across that front line and midfield, you know, there's five or six that would, I think, walk into most teams at this tournament. And I think to have that much attacking talent and the focus solely to be on Messi, I think is, you know, wrong from their expectations. And as you mentioned, when he plays for them, it does seem like the pressure, I wouldn't say gets to him, but you can tell there's that real sort of overhead on him where there's that expectancy to deliver like he does for Barcelona. And I think playing in a Barcelona team where the world-class players around him step up, you know, your likes of Suarez, Iniesta, who's just leaving, Sergio Busquets, you know, deliver week in, week out. And you can sort of point, not necessarily the blame at Messi, but, you know, there needs to be questions asked of the other players. You mentioned Di Maria, you know, Messi and Aguero playing nice 1-2s and Di Maria almost been a bystander, really. You know, I think more questions need to be asked of those players rather than Messi, you know, individually. And I think it doesn't help as well that, you know, you look at the sort of the defence Argentina have got where, you know, Otamendi is probably the only sort of world-class player, I guess is the best way of putting it, in that defensive area. So, you know, as good as they are going forward, there is that real sort of fragility at the back, and, you know, that doesn't help as well. So I think, yeah, definitely, I think there should be more focus on the players around Messi and not necessarily, you know, the main focus on him. But, you know, when you are the best player in the world, that's always going to come. But I think definitely with Ronaldo, as you mentioned, I think I was having this conversation with someone earlier today. I think looking at Ronaldo, he seems the perfect fit for someone who, you know, would go into management after. You can see him on the pitch. And it did make me laugh at one point during the Portugal-Spain game. He was always almost berating the manager for, you know, a tactical sort of call that he made. And, you know, I just don't see Messi doing that for Argentina. So I think when it comes to international level, Ronaldo really, you know, has the team behind him and he can almost lift them. Whereas I think Messi, as you mentioned, doesn't quite have that sort of bit about him in his persona. But, you know, definitely to go back to my first point, I think there needs to be more questions asked of the rest of the Argentinian squad.
Yeah, that's certainly a good point. Obviously, Barcelona every year can fix whatever holes that they develop. A national side, obviously, less able to do that. But you both make very good points. There are very good attacking options that Argentina have that should be able to kind of take that brunt or at least some of that spotlight away. I mean, especially like a player like Aguero, who basically stepped into the Premier League and said, I'm the best striker in the Premier League, and there was nobody else to really challenge, of course, until, biasedly speaking, the Harry Kane era here. But on the other side, I mean, he had that individual moment to score the penalty and didn't. And I think that's part of a mentality shift. If you like watch his body language between Argentina and Barcelona, it genuinely could be two different men. When it's at Argentina, anytime anything goes wrong, he either looks straight at his feet or straight to the sky. Like, it doesn't really feel like he's part of the Argentina team, if that makes sense. Like the spotlight has been exclusively on him for so long that anytime he messes up, and it's like, oh, I can't believe I messed up. Anytime anybody else messes up, they're like messing it up for him. I mean, obviously, I'm not in his head. I don't want to claim to know that. But just body language-wise, it is very, very different. And you could tell after the penalty, after the match when he was ripping off the captain's band, it feels like he's at a loss. Like, he doesn't know what else he can do except, like, his penalty record for Argentina, not very good. Like, that's something that you could do. It feels like, I forget which TV show it was from, but it was like, we're all out of answers and we've already tried nothing. Like, there are things that could be done to improve, but it feels like a mentality thing to me. And it feels crazy to sit behind a microphone and talk about Messi's flaws as a player, especially after thing he's done for the club. But on the countryside, it's just not there. And maybe he had to have more success at Argentina at a younger age. Like, maybe if he had built that confidence early on, we wouldn't be seeing what we're seeing now. But as for right now, I am not very confident that Argentina will win matches when he puts on a kit. Again, as you guys say, the squad inherently not as good. The midfield provided very little yesterday. Obviously, the defense, there are question marks around. But it's not a very good situation for Argentina. And kind of like what we talked about in the previous topic, all of these big sides have question marks in their squads. Like, there were a couple, like Germany and Spain, were heading into the tournament and you're like, that's about as perfect as you're going to get, but we're starting to see flaws in them as well. And I think Argentina's, is the squad and the fact that Messi has proven thus far incapable of just like lunging them forward in those huge moments. I mean, they got to the final last World Cup, which is obviously no small feat, but they weren't able to win that one after, I think that one went to extra time, if memory serves, before
Mario
Götze scored the winner. Yeah. And we kind of talked about before we hit record, just so that I stop rambling, just that it would be great if we could stop having this conversation, but his inability to seal moments like this is why we still have to. All right, on a more uplifting note, the hosts, Russia, had a huge win on the opening day. Obviously, it was against Saudi Arabia, one of the poorest performances I've ever seen at a World Cup. I'm sure you guys have your own thoughts as that as well. But that a little bit to the side, it was a huge win nonetheless. So how much do you think the win did come due to the opposition? But also, how far do you think they can go in the tournament?
Straight off the bat, the result, I think, was massively due to the opponents. I think that Saudi Arabia are really, really poor team. I obviously, watching a lot of Australia, I got to see them when Australia played them in the Asian qualifiers, and even under Bert van Marwijk, who's now the Australian coach, they were horrible. And to be honest, I wasn't too surprised to see them concede that many goals to Russia, but you know, you got to give Russia credit where credit's due. They scored the goals. They did look impressive on the day. I think it was a big event for the players and the country, and I think that kind of seems a little bit like a one-off to me. But when you look at teams like Uruguay in their group, but then at the same time, you know, you score five goals in your opening game, I'm going to find it pretty hard to see Egypt making up that goal difference if it comes down to that, which it probably will when you look at the fixtures. So I can see Russia making it into the second round because of their goal difference now. Any further than that is pretty unrealistic, I'd say. But, you know, I think that Russia, you know, got their big marquee win. I think that it's exciting to see players like Golovin put in performances like that. I think that hopefully the Russians enjoyed that, because I don't see it lasting too much longer.
Yeah, I think definitely you mentioned Golovin at the end there. I think there was a lot of focus on him going into the World Cup, and I think he really delivered, you know, to get the goal and the two assists that he did. And I think sort of as to look at it from an off-field point of view, I think, you know, there were a lot of concerns going into this Russia World Cup about, you know, sort of fan behaviour, and, you know, there was more focus off the pitch in the build-up to it. I think exactly what the World Cup needed on that opening day after the opening ceremony was, you know, a comprehensive Russia win to almost settle the country, really, and, you know, to go out and put a performance like that. I think if you could have chose any of the 30 or the other 31 teams at the World Cup for Russia to play on the opening day, I think Saudi Arabia would have been most people's picks. And, you know, obviously they could have been overawed by the occasion, but to go out and put in that performance, you know, albeit against a really poor team, you know, you can only beat what's in front of you. So, you know, delighted for them to get off to a winning start. And to go on to your second point, Kev, sort of how far I think they can go, I think I agree with Stephen that, you know, realistically they should get out of the group. I think Egypt, you know, as good as Mo Salah is, I don't think he can sort of carry them single-handedly through to the knockout stages. I'd be very surprised if he did, especially with that goal difference now that they've got to make up. So I think definitely into the first knockout round, you know, who they get, you know, remains to be seen. We've had the sort of other teams in other groups work out. You know, it could be anyone.
Spain or Portugal, you'd assume.
Yeah, should be. But yeah, as we mentioned earlier, you know, the big teams sort of dropping points. You know, I was chatting to someone earlier and saying that it'd be just like England to go and beat Belgium and win the group now and end up playing Germany, who, you know, had finished second, for example.
On penalty. So,
yeah, well, so, yeah, I think definitely the first knockout round is a possibility for them. You know, once you get to one-game knockout football, anything can happen. You know, you only have to look, as I go back to that Germany-Mexico game earlier, Germany not turning up and Mexico having a go. If that's a knockout round, you know, Germany are sort of packing their bags as we speak. So I think definitely getting out of the group, you know, they should accomplish that. And it's going to be sort of interesting to see how they progress as a side. You know, they've got some very exciting players in there. I mentioned Golovin. Cheryshev came off the bench for Zagoev and, you know, really took his chance and shined in that game. So I think once they get to that knockout stage, obviously, I don't think many people would say they're going to win the whole tournament. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the mood in the country shifts once they do get knocked out. You know, it's been relatively sort of quiet on sort of the news front off the pitch at the moment in Russia. So, you know, for their sake, I hope they go deep in the tournament and, you know, we have sort of a peaceful World Cup with no sort of crowd trouble. But yeah, I think definitely the first knockout round is where they should be aiming for.
Yeah, I think those are all excellent points. And James, you do make a good point that even if it is Spain or Portugal, these big sides have shown to have weaknesses, although you'd assume that the talent would overwhelm at that stage. Teams getting a little bit of momentum by then. But undoubtedly, regardless of whether or not their journey stops there, just to have this kind of day for a home nation, and again, the home nation has never lost their opening match in World Cup history, but just to have that kind of result, especially after Russia really struggled in their friendlies leading up to the World Cup. Obviously, they didn't have to go through qualifying. But the fans were very upset with the setup, with the players, with the manager heading into the World Cup. And then to have that kind of first moment was probably equal parts incredible to watch and also surprising, which probably made it perhaps even all the more sweet. I agree, though. I think the goal difference really helps them if Egypt get there. I think Egypt needed that draw against Uruguay, lost it just at the death. I think that really could have made this group more interesting. But as it stands, it does kind of feel like it's going to be Uruguay and Russia going through in some order. Obviously, Russia were very impressive there. Some of the big teams we mentioned, a little bit disappointing. But for you guys, if you had to isolate one of each, one that impressed and one that disappointed, which teams have done that for you this tournament thus far?
Yeah, in terms of impressed, it may actually sound pretty strange, but I'm actually going to go with Spain. hear me out. I think that if you look at all three of the goals they conceded, there is a touch of fortune in all three. I think that while defensively they may not have impressed, I think that players like Isco and Diego Costa, even David Silva to an extent, all looked fantastic to me. And I think that I was just looking at the options they brought off the bench. I think that each of them added to the team. Even Koke, I think, had an awesome game. I think that some of their attacking link-up was excellent. I think that they look a real threat going forward. Yeah, if they can sort out that kind of defensive issues, and if they're obviously not going to come up against a player like Ronaldo every game, so I think they really impressed me. And I think that just to chug a second one that impressed me, I think that Serbia looked really decent today. But in terms of disappointing, I'd probably have to say probably the most disappointing is Argentina that I've seen so far. I think that I was really looking forward to seeing kind of if they could put it all together finally after all these years. And to not see Dybala start, I thought was pretty naive. I think that, Di Maria, I don't think, really offered much at all. I think that it was all very methodical. Everything went straight through the middle. They didn't use the width at all. I think that everything had to go through Messi. I think that the defense showed why everyone's been questioning them. I think Fazio didn't look that great. I think Otamendi didn't offer too much. And yeah, I think that Argentina could be a real candidate to crash out at the group stage, which should be just disastrous.
Yeah, I think sort of to go with teams that impressed me first, I think to look at the Argentina game from the other aspect, I think Iceland and, you know, to speak as an England fan, what they did to us in the Euros, it should be no surprise. But I thought they were, you know, solid at the back. You know, Finn Bogason took his chance very well. Quite a difficult chance to take, sort of looking back on the replay. It sat up to him. And to finish that coolly, you know, in a World Cup against one of the favourites, you know, no easy feat. So Iceland, definitely, you know, I think they can. I don't think they'll have a run as good as they did in Euros, but I think they will sort of surprise a few people this tournament and, you know, further cement themselves as one of the, not necessarily the best teams in Europe, but one of the solid teams that, you know, people shouldn't take lightly when they're drawn against them. The other team that impressed me, and again, to go on to the opposite side of the game that you mentioned, Stephen, I was really impressed with Portugal. I thought going into that game, you know, albeit Spain with the drama surrounding their managerial sort of appointment and getting Fernando Hierro in sort of the day before the tournament starts, I still fancied Spain to comfortably beat Portugal. But, you know, Ronaldo in particular, albeit, as you mentioned, there was a slice of luck with each three of the goals. You know, the second especially, you know, David De Gea, you'd back him to save that shot, you know, 99 times out of 100. But, you know, that one time it goes in, I thought Ronaldo was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, really, for a player that has done so well in European championships but never really had that standout World Cup that gets people talking about him and Messi as the best ever, you know, sort of, I was really surprised to learn the stat that, you know, World Cups before this one, he'd only scored two goals. And, you know, to eclipse that in the first game of the tournament, you know, is fantastic for him against, you know, one of the favourites to actually win the whole thing. Very good by him. And I was really impressed with sort of the discipline of the Portugal side, especially to go behind against Spain, and, you know, Spain probably the best team in the tournament at keeping the ball, to get back into it and, you know, snatch the point. That blows that group wide open, where most people would have thought it'd be Spain first, Portugal second. You know, it's going to be a straight shootout almost for who goes through in first place and who goes through in second place. So that group will be certainly interesting to keep an eye on. The one that I was going to go for disappointing me, and following as much Bundesliga that I do, you know, looking at the German team and players week in, week out, I was, you know, really disappointed with Germany. They had struggled in sort of the friendlies building up to the tournament. They didn't look too convincing, but, you know, as an Englishman, you always know that Germany turn it on the sort of the big tournaments when it matters. And everything that we've come to associate with Germany under Jogi Löw in sort of the last couple of tournaments was not there today. There was no discipline. There was a real lack of solidity at the back. You know, Boateng looked a shell of his former player, and I don't know if that's injuries catching up with him. He's missed a large portion of the season through various sort of niggling injuries this year. And we were talking off air that, you know, I can't believe, especially with the pace Mexico had on the break, that a player like Rudiger didn't start for them in defence, especially knowing sort of the issues Boateng has had. I thought Joshua Kimmich was really disappointing. Again, the amount of space that he left for Lozano to exploit down that German right-hand side was frightening at times, and it looked like men against boys. And, you know, if I'd have said men against boys, Germany-Mexico before the game, most people would have assumed I'm talking about Germany. So to sort of see it the other way around, and, you know, mentioned on commentary numerous times, that lack of sort of pace up front for Germany, you know, the questions are going to be asked about leaving Leroy Sané at home. And I think Jogi Löw has got one of the first real sort of difficult periods now. Obviously, we don't want to get too hung up on just the one defeat. You know, I'd still fancy them to go through in their group. But I think he's got a real difficult couple of days now until their next game. And he's really going to sort of have to earn his wage over these next few days to see what they need to change and, you know, correct it quickly. That's the beauty of a World Cup. You know, the games come thick and fast and there's no time to sort of dwell on a defeat. You know, you've got to pick yourself up and go again. So Germany would be the team definitely for me that have disappointed. Everyone else has sort of dropped points but got a point, if that makes sense, in a draw, whereas Germany, you know, it got beat in the game, and we're probably, out of all the sort of quote favourite teams so far, the one that looked sort of the worst is the best way of putting it, actually on the pitch. So yeah, definitely them as the team that disappointed.
Yeah, I'm going to start on the other side of that exact match. I thought of all the teams that played a big team, I thought Mexico played the best. They came out with a very decided play style that they were going to kind of counter at pace with just two or three players, not to make kind of an overused Leicester analogy, but the specific style in which they did it, where most of the team stayed back and then the attacking players, which tended to just be somewhere between two and four of them with everybody else holding their positions, was very ingenious. And it was a tactic that we saw during Leicester's title run, where the later in the match it gets, the more you need a goal, the more effective that tactic is for the opposition, because then all of a sudden you're committing numbers forward. Now, instead of it being two to four players against your three, now it's against two. Now it's just the center backs. And we talked about before we hit record that we knew that Germany had pace issues in their back line. And so we certainly saw that. As you mentioned, Kimmich kind of kept getting undone on his side. But it felt very... it didn't feel like luck. It felt like this was the tactic that Mexico aimed to use, and it worked brilliantly. And you mentioned, I think, Stephen, it was you that was saying the level of management in the international game isn't as high. I mean, Jogi Löw has been highly praised for years, has been linked to big jobs, and he said, no, I'd rather stay with Germany. And he has obviously done incredible things. But how do you not have a reaction to that tactic for 90 minutes? Like, there was no response. Mexico could do in the first minute what they did in the 90th minute, and there was no change to it. I'm not going to get into who should have been in the squad or who should have been in the 11, but just tactically, you have to have a response to that, and he just didn't the whole time. And so I kind of think, James, to your point, Germany was very disappointing, but I don't think that takes anything away from what Mexico did at all. So I was very, very impressed with what they managed to do. And sorry, what?
I was just going to say, to quickly jump on that point as well, you know, for Mexico to put someone like Carlos Vela, you know, an attacking player that you wouldn't necessarily associate with sort of disciplined defensive work. To have him sat on Toni Kroos all game and
really
be that focal point of starting the attacks worked, you know, absolute wonders. And yeah, Stephen was saying the managerial sort of level in international football has gone down recently, but I think the Mexico manager got it absolutely spot on today.
Yeah, yeah, great point. Again, it's the other side of the same coin in this match. But yeah, I think Argentina probably were the team that were most disappointing in that they didn't really feel that dangerous. Like, it felt like all their danger ended as soon as they got to the penalty area. Whereas the other teams seemed to have their moments. I mean, Brazil had loads of chances today, just were unlucky in front of net. Germany even had their chances against Mexico, to be fair, just weren't able to capitalize there either. But Argentina, it just felt kind of pointless at times. Obviously, if Messi scores the penalty, then they're through. But we've already been all over all over that. So Argentina going to be the side that disappointed me. All right, now we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with questions for each of our guests.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, and we are back. Stephen will lead in with you, as we've been doing. Obviously, in the France match, Australia, at least from a neutral perspective, I thought put in a terrific performance. Unfortunate result. Is that how you viewed it? And also, is it promising or concerning? Because promising, like I said, the play was very good. Probably means you have a better chance against teams in the future, but a little bit disappointing, because if you had picked up even a point here, it would have done you great favor in terms of trying to advance out of this group.
Yeah, so coming into this World Cup, it was interesting, because obviously we had the fairly late managerial change. We didn't know kind of what to expect shape-wise and tactically from Bert van Marwijk. I mean, we suspected it would be a bit of a defensive, try and destroy tactic, and kind of maybe collect something on the counter. But it was actually, I found it more pleasant to watch than kind of your typical thuggy performance. I thought that we were really compact at the back. I thought that really we defended really well. We used the offside trap quite a lot. Mbappe only really got behind our defense after about 4 minutes. Then after that, we kind of learned our lesson with that and were a lot smarter and used our fullbacks to kind of track his runs. I thought that our midfield looked terrific. I was really pleasantly surprised by kind of how we, not only how we started the game. I did think that if we could keep France scoreless after 20 minutes, I think we'd be in with a shot. But just that whole first half performance, I thought we played really well. I thought that, you know, our main issue from my point of view is that we just don't have anything going forward in terms of goal scoring threat from open play. So I knew that was going to be our issue. Then going obviously into the second half, just chaos opened up. We had the first ever VAR incident, which was interesting. I did think that was a penalty, so I didn't have really much to argue with there. And then obviously it was pretty harsh to lose on that own goal. Now it's been awarded to Aziz Bajic as an own goal, not Pogba's goal. That was obviously disappointing, especially because of how late it came, and kind of it felt like France didn't exactly earn it. I felt like we were, maybe this is my Australian bias, I did think that we were the better team, not in, maybe in terms of attacking wise, but just in terms of structure and in terms of overall team play. I felt like we were really in control of that game without being in possession. And obviously it was pretty crushing in the moment to lose the game. But, you know, looking back, we can kind of be happy with our performance. I think that we do have a chance going into these games against Peru and Denmark. Obviously, we're going to need to pick up a win now from one of these two games to have any kind of chance of going through. Now with Denmark winning their opening game, I do see it. I don't think we will get through the group now. I think that a draw would have really bumped up those chances. But you know, I think that we can kind of take our performance in this France game and then try and propel ourselves forward. This is definitely the thing about this performance that is kind of the best thing is that there was really no expectation going to this World Cup. We kind of have a squad that is got nothing really going forward. Defensively is fairly inexperienced. And in the midfield is probably our strongest point, but there just was no expectations. We're kind of in the middle of our generations. We have a really good young team, and we had obviously a really good generation just gone past with the fragments of, you know, Tim Cahill and Harry Kewell and Schwarzer, all these guys. So yeah, I didn't really expect too much coming into this World Cup, and I was pleasantly surprised by our performance against France.
Yeah, you just mentioned Tim Cahill there, and I wanted to follow up on that. He led Australia in goals during qualifying, didn't take part in the match against France. I'm sure many neutrals also wondering, where was he and why was he not used?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a big question. A lot of me and my family were asking while watching the game. We're calling for Cahill to come on, maybe to score a late goal. I think probably it was due to the fact that it was 1-1 until the 83rd minute. I think that Australia didn't really want to roll the dice until then. I do think it was surprising we didn't maybe chuck him on after that own goal. But yeah, in terms of the qualifying, he kind of wasn't really a major part of qualifying until the second half to maybe even third quarter of qualifying. Then he scored a lot of big goals, obviously, made kind of a renaissance in the team. And yeah, obviously being at age 38, he's not playing at as a high level as we'd like him to. He's kind of there more as a talismanic figure and maybe someone we can chuck on in the last kind of minute to roll the dice. I wouldn't suspect to see him really play. We do have, like I said, I'm not too confident in our players going forward, but we do have young players, people like Jamie McLaren, who I think is an interesting option, but we didn't play him either. It's probably not. You'd expect to see Cahill at this tournament at some point, but yeah, I do think in the France game it was probably due to us obviously being in a good shape for most of the game and not really requiring him in that game until very late on.
Yeah, the player that did start up front was Naboot, if that's how you say that. Was not particularly impressed by him. Is that somebody that has potential and just didn't show it, or is he kind of a bit of a nothing forward?
Yeah, I mean, I've personally, I don't see much in him at all. I don't think that he's kind of a little bit of a nothing player in as fairly as you can say that. I don't think he's particularly great at one specific aspect of his game. I think he can do a little bit of everything, but I don't think to a high quality standard. I personally mentioned a guy before, Jamie McLaren, who I would love to see start for Australia. He played for my local team, Perth Glory, for a long time and has been kind of a regular in the A-League for a while and made the move over to Scotland and has done decently well for himself. He's just a player that's kind of a bit more energetic, he's got a bit more about him, I feel, and could probably do a bit more damage, be a bit more, he's got a bit of a pace, which I think in the boot, while he is probably a bit more of a technical player compared to McLaren, I think that Australia are really going to live and die by counterattacks and by people that can latch on to balls from Aaron Moy. And I don't think that Naboot really offers that much in that regard.
Gotcha. All right, coming to you now, James, talking about England. Obviously, they have not played yet, but curious as to how you view England's chances at this World Cup. We kind of mentioned it with Jamie on the last show, that the media tends to be up and down simultaneously about England's chances. But with Belgium the only super strong side in this group, surely you're fairly confident that England can progress.
Yeah, as confident as I can be. I've always learned not to get ahead of myself with England. You know, every tournament we seem to have the same conversation about how it's our time, and then, you know, the disappointment sort of inevitably follows. So not getting ahead of myself, but, you know, as we mentioned earlier, seeing how all the other sort of so-called big teams have struggled, you know, does fill me with some confidence that if we can go out and put in a performance against Tunisia, I think more teams will sort of take note of us. There's sort of around the media this time around, there's been a lot less sort of focus on the team is probably sort of the way I'd put it. Normally, you know, the nation gets wrapped up in this World Cup frenzy, and, you know, we really build ourselves up as this team that is going to go on, we're going to win the tournament. And then after the first performance, you know, even if we, you know, get a draw or a narrow defeat, as the case was against Italy last World Cup, you know, a team that, you know, we're always there or thereabouts, even though they haven't made it this time, that negativity comes straight away. And I don't think that helps the players, you know, in the slightest, especially with the sort of the way Twitter is nowadays. You know, players have access to all this sort of press when sort of years gone by, they wouldn't see sort of national papers been away. So, yeah, as you mentioned with the media, especially the Raheem Sterling stuff that goes on, which sort of as someone who does a bit of podcasting and that kind of thing, I don't see, obviously, you know, you need to sell papers and that kind of thing, but I don't see where the gain is. You know, you run an article hyping everyone up for the World Cup, and then you go in the same publication, put something that, you know, is getting at one of our players, you know, just doesn't make sense to me. But, you know, there we go. But yeah, going into the World Cup, quietly confident that we can do well. I think the real sort of mood around the country is, as long as we can, you know, play well and not have a repeat of the Euros where we sort of struggled through the group, that sort of Euros run was really sort of the Wales game sort of papered over the cracks, really, sort of winning it in the last minute against one of the other home nations. You know, we saw how bad we were against Iceland. So sort of from my point of view, if we can get to the knockout stages, which, as you mentioned, Belgium being the only other sort of big team in the group, I'd expect us to do. I'd be thoroughly disappointed if we didn't. I think if we can get to the quarterfinals and run up against someone like a Germany or a Brazil and go out sort of to them, but go out trying and playing well, no complaints from me. So, yeah, quietly confident, but I've learned over the years not to get ahead of myself when it comes to the England national team.
Yeah, and then obviously there's been a lot of pressure, hopefully not Messi-esque pressure, already heaped onto the shoulders of one Harry Kane due to his performances for Tottenham. There was even an article about him in the New York Times today, which didn't describe him in a very favorable light. If you want to go see some of the quotes of that, it was pretty amusing. It was more attacks on his character than his ability as a football player. But just curious if you think he's the kind of player that can kind of lead from the front. Of course, he was recently given the captain's badge. Does that make you any more confident?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of talk about who was going to sort of captain the side. Obviously, Jordan Henderson would be a candidate. You know, it usually sort of is a midfield player or a defender that gets the captain's armband. But, you know, no complaints from me over Harry Kane. I think while he may not be the most sort of vocal on the pitch, you know, he is that one genuine world-class player that we've got at the moment. And, you know, the likes of Ronaldo and Messi, obviously I'm not comparing Harry Kane to those two. I'm not getting ahead of myself. But he's one of those players who doesn't need to say a lot on the pitch. You know, he leads by example, and his performances, as you mentioned, Kev, for Tottenham, you know, speak for themselves. So I think Harry Kane as captain, you know, smart choice. And what Gareth Southgate has really sort of done well is he's created almost a togetherness, which sort of, obviously, I don't know how the camp is from the outside looking in, but it would appear, compared to previous years and, you know, all the interviews that the players have done, he's really sort of rejuvenated a squad, which, you know, the majority of these players did play at the Euros under Roy Hodgson. And, you know, he's really got the camp sort of back together. There's a really good mood and feeling around the camp. And I think, you know, Harry Kane seems well-liked in the squad, and having him as captain, you know, he's one of the younger players in the squad, but a lot of players do, and rightly so, you know, respect him, see how well he's done at club level. And, you know, hopefully for us, he can take that Tottenham form into the World Cup.
Yeah, we mentioned some of the other big sides having some flaws. If there was a gap in this England squad, where do you think it is?
I think definitely, I wouldn't call it sort of a flaw, but I think it could be our undoing, is the fact that while we have taken quite a young squad this year, you know, that sort of comes with a bit of inexperience at international level. We've got quite a lot of players who are sort of 15 caps and under in the squad. And, you know, while they've had sort of experiences at Premier League and sort of Trent Alexander-Arnold, for example, Jordan Henderson playing in Champions League finals, there's that real difference when you make the step up to international football. So I think especially the Tunisia game, you know, is going to be sort of a potential banana skin. I'd still fancy us to win the game tomorrow night as we're recording this on the Sunday. But I think, you know, our one weakness might be that sort of inexperience at international level, you know, but at the same time, looking at it the other way, that comes with sort of fearlessness as well. And, you know, we were talking about Mexico singing their praises. Teams being fearless against these so-called big teams. And I'm not saying Tunisia are a big team that we need to be sort of going after, but for them to come into this tournament, and as I mentioned, the sort of lack of hype this time around, there's a really good sort of feeling around the squad. And I think, you know, these young players will go out there, they'll express themselves. And I think, compared to, and I hate using the term because it always used to annoy me even when I was younger, the golden generation of, you know, your Beckhams, your Lampard, Gerrard, Scholes, there seems to be no real sort of egos and sort of players who think they're, you know, above the rest of the team this time around. So while that inexperience, you know, could be our undoing, I do think as well you can look at it on the other hand as one of our strengths as well. And it's going to be really sort of exciting and interesting to see, you know, how we do get on in the tournament.
Yeah, obviously England, a very big side, very heavily listened portion of the map to this particular show. So certainly wishing them the best of luck. Next up, we'll hit player watch. We'll lead in with you again here, Stephen. Australia already played. We couldn't do the whole thing being who most impressed you in your most recent match because England haven't played yet and our third guest dropped. But for Australia, who was the player that impressed you the most in the match against France?
Yeah, it was undoubtedly Aaron Moy for me. He absolutely dominated in the midfield. While he didn't always have possession of the ball because Australia kind of struggled to gain possession in that area, when he did, he was decisive. He put the ball in for the Umtiti handball and led to the penalty. He looked composed completely. I've been a big fan of Aaron Moy for a long time, and it was really satisfying to see him picked up by a team like Huddersfield, who was kind of in the championship going to play this forward-thinking football. And I've really enjoyed watching him kind of grow as a player. He was fantastic in Australia. He was obviously probably the best player that we've seen in our domestic league. It probably ever, to be honest. He led the Western Sydney Wanderers to win the Asian Champions League, and just completely dominated over here. And he's actually kind of struggled to break into the Australian team, which is very surprising to a lot of people. But he's kind of really found his feet in the last probably 10 to 12 months. And he's really become a really key part of our team now going forward. He's easily the most technically able player that we've seen in Australia for a long, long time. And he's also just a type of player that we don't see in Australia. He's obviously not as good as someone like a Kevin De Bruyne, but he is that kind of player who can kind of dictate the game from midfield and play passes that nobody else can see and put a ball on someone's head from, you know, 50 yards away. So he was excellent, and I really look forward to kind of seeing what he can do against Denmark and Peru heading forward.
Yeah, is that the player you would tell neutrals to keep their eye on the most, or is there somebody else that may be of interest to others?
I obviously tell people to keep their eye on him, but for me, I really think that Massimo Luongo is an Australian player with untapped potential. He didn't make the team this week, but I think that he should play going into the next two games. So I would keep an eye out for him. He was decisive in our Asian Cup win a few years back. And despite not having the best club career so far, he has been one of the better players for QPR when I speak to QPR fans. And I think that he's always been effective for Australia when given the opportunity. And if we do play a three-man midfield with Jednak sitting, I think that Moy and Luongo in the midfield would run riot.
Cool. Also, Massimo Luongo, former Tottenham Youth Academy product. Yeah. So a little biased favoritism towards him from this side of the microphone. Coming to you now, James, who for England should people be keeping an eye on for you, aside from Kane, who, of course, we just mentioned?
Yeah, it's, as I mentioned earlier, the lack of sort of... Obviously, we've got a very good squad this year, but the lack of superstar players, I think there's going to be a lot more sort of a team sort of element with us this year. So to single out sort of a couple, I think, and it's probably the first tournament I'm going into where there's a real case for one or two players in each position rather than a nailed down 11. So I think Jordan Pickford, and that's not me being biased as a Preston North End fan, that he was on loan for us and did fantastically. I think he's going to have a really good tournament. He has sort of shone in quite a poor Everton side last season. Did fantastically well at Sunderland in the year they got relegated. So for him to sort of come into this tournament, I'd expect him to start over Jack Butland and Nick Pope. I think he's going to impress a lot of people. And I think the way that Gareth Southgate wants us to play, sort of passing out from the back and adopting a more sort of European style of play, I think Pickford is going to be sort of crucial to that with his distribution. And then sort of to work forward, I think Kyle Walker, who, you know, under Pep Guardiola at Man City, has really developed into quite a ball-playing defender, obviously, and you're probably the best person to ask, Kev, and I don't know if I'm right to assume this, but sort of seeing him at Tottenham, he seemed to be that sort of classic wing-back for me nowadays. You know, pace going forward, wasn't necessarily the best at defending, and you know, looked a bit suspect at the back. But I think Pep Guardiola has really sort of developed him. And, you know, to play as sort of the right-hand centre-back in a back three or back five, whichever way you look at it, I think he definitely, for sort of more to see how he plays rather than for people to keep an eye on that he is going to play well, is one that I'm sort of quite intrigued. In our few warm-up games where he played there, you know, he looked, you know, more than confident in that position, but you know, their warm-up games, it's when you get to the crunch of it where it's really going to matter. So definitely Kyle Walker for me is an interesting one to keep an eye on. And then to go forward, I think the one player who he may not necessarily start, but sort of looking at, you know, our predicted lineup, he might, but you know, you could make a case for about four or five players to start in this position. The one that I'm probably tipping ahead of the likes of Dele Alli and Raheem Sterling, who I expect to have good tournaments anyway, is Jesse Lingard. And, you know, while he may not be on the same level yet as a Sterling or a Dele Alli, he's proved, you know, time and time again for Man United that he is that player that steps up in the big games. And, you know, he always seems, whenever I watch United in, you know, a cup semi-final or something like that at Wembley or in a big game against one of the other big sides in England, he always seems to be that player that he may not necessarily be having the best game, but he'll pop up and get a goal when it really matters. And, you know, to have someone who can do that, especially in an international knockout tournament, sort of getting past the group stage is absolutely vital. So I think Jesse Lingard definitely for me is going to be that sort of dark horse sort of in the England side that, you know, the focus might not necessarily be on, but I think he's definitely going to have a good World Cup. And, you know, sort of from my point of view, really hoping that he does, because, you know, that'll lead England going a long way. And then the other player, you know, has sort of rave reviews wrote about him. His form's dipped off a bit this season, but, you know, you'd expect that of a young player at some point. I think Marcus Rashford is going to be one. You know, we probably won't start with Harry Kane sort of taking that forward berth, but to come off the bench, you know, he came off the bench in the Euros and was one of our only real players that could sort of hold his head high in those last few games in the Euros. So for that impact, and we talked about Germany's lack of pace, to have players like Rashford, Vardy, you know, Sterling, Alli or Lingard, whichever one doesn't sort of make it into that starting 11, to have people like that coming off the bench now, I don't think there's many defences in this tournament that fancy, you know, coming up against a Jamie Vardy or a Marcus Rashford after sort of 60-70 minutes. So
yeah,
I think while they may not necessarily start, you know, those players have got just as important part to play off the bench as well. So yeah, Rashford, Lingard, Walker and Pickford would be my sort of England players to keep an eye on over the tournament.
Yeah, bringing up Kyle Walker is definitely an interesting one because we've, as you said, we've all seen how good he can be as a wingback, especially over the last two or so years when he really established himself as the best at that position in the Premier League. But this move to center back, I honestly wonder if, A, it's to deal with the issue that Germany has, the pace in the back line. But a lot of the English center backs aren't necessarily just towers, you know, aside from Cahill, who obviously never really had that much pace and has already lost some of that not-so-much pace. But I think the main point with Walker in this side playing as a center back is to facilitate having both him and Trippier in, because the delivery that both of them have is incredible. Obviously, Trippier a little bit better from wide areas at crossing, but Walker far more dangerous to opposing defenses in that he can stretch them. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they constantly kind of rotate to the right some, so that both Trippier and Walker can get forward a little bit. Although we have seen him make some interior runs, obviously much more in the mold of an actual center back. But his pace and size are incredible. I think the center back shift is an interesting one. I don't think it's one that I would have done. But as I said, it does facilitate both of them. And for those playing at home, what side is that? The right side, with Sterling up front. So now you're worried about Sterling, who's probably going to try to cut in. You have Trippier overlapping, who's one of the best crossers as a defender that I've seen in recent years. And then if Kyle Walker also can manage to get up there, then his pace is lethal as well. It's really going to cause some problems for whoever's defending there, especially Belgium, who have no real left back. I mean, they've played Vertonghen on and off there for the past 5 years, but there's not really a solution there. So I do think that that's going to be a very interesting setup. The only issue with Kyle Walker playing more centrally is that every once in a while he still makes some dumb mistakes. And when he's doing it at right wing back in front of a back three, that's limited by whoever your right center back is. But if he's one of those center backs, the amount of space in between where he makes an error and the back of the net is much smaller. But that's the only concerning side. But it could very well work out.
Yeah, I completely agree. Completely agree. And I think as well for Southgate, it really gives him sort of another option. If, you know, obviously we're going to play this 3/5 back, however you want to look at it. If in games, you know, against Tunisia and Panama especially, I think it'll sort of work really well for us. The fact that, you know, if you do need to change it and shift to a back four and shift Walker out to right back and then push Trippier forward with his delivery, you know, you don't have to waste a substitution to get the players on to adapt to that formation. You know, Walker playing as a centre back, but then can also shift, as you mentioned, to a wing back, you know, really helps out Southgate. And, you know, I think it gives us a lot more flexibility in sort of in-game management and being able to adapt to different game situations, which, you know, we haven't had in the past. So definitely, yeah. I think it's going to sort of help us in the long run.
Yeah, that squad flexibility is an excellent shout as well. From there, we're going to move into match previews, which will be the end of our show. We'll lead in, we're switching it this time just because I wrote them down chronologically instead of in order of guests for some reason. James, we'll stick with you here. Obviously, the match against Tunisia, in theory, not that difficult, but we've talked about the Giants kind of struggling against quote-unquote smaller sides thus far. You said you are confident in making it out of the group, though, so I assume that means you think you'll be picking up a result tomorrow as we record, or today perhaps as you're listening.
Yeah, I'd fancy us, if I was to put a bet on, obviously I'd go with England to get 3 points in this game. I think for us playing second as well, to see how Belgium get on, you know, definitely I think they're going to beat Panama. I don't think there'd be many people who would give Panama a shout, but you know, this World Cup, expect the unexpected, I guess. But yeah, for me, looking at it, I think the best way to sort of describe it and to sort of see how the squad has progressed is the Algeria game. I think it was last World Cup where we drew and there was that famous sort of clip of Wayne Rooney coming off after the game, sort of staring down the camera, sort of having a go at the England fans who'd, you know, travelled all the way to support them. It's, for me, set up as like a similar tie to that Algeria game, one of these tricky sort of banana skin nations where you should win, but there's always that potential for an upset. So I think for us to get at them early, like we did in the two warm-up games against Nigeria and Costa Rica, is absolutely vital. And I think the earlier we can get the first goal, I think the better. It'll settle the nerves for the tournament. And, you know, there's, apart from the Russia game, there's not really been a big sort of victory scoreline wise so far this tournament. So if we can get an early goal, you know, Tunisia will need to come at us. And we mentioned that pace on the break. You know, you brought it up, Kev, with Walker, Trippier, Sterling. You look on the other side, Danny Rose, if he plays, you know, Rashford and Vardy coming on. And I think if we get an early goal, we can really sort of take the game to them and put a couple past them. So I think the longer it goes on at 0-0, I think people start to get a bit more restless, you know, as is the way with the majority of the England fans. So an early goal is absolutely crucial, I think, you know, in the first sort of 20 or so minutes, really settle the nerves and announce ourselves into the tournament. But yeah, I'd expect us to win and then go into that Panama game full of confidence on sort of a week today, next Sunday.
If I had to press you for a result?
I'd like to think we'd keep a clean sheet. You know, sort of looking at Tunisia, there isn't really a standout player that worries me. Obviously, they've got to the World Cup on merit, so they're going to be no sort of pushover in the same way that, you know, Saudi Arabia were. But if I was to go scoreline-wise, 3-0 is probably the one I'd go for, which sounds silly of me to say as an England fan. Normally I'd say, you know, we'll scrape it 1-0 with like a last minute sort of deflected goal after a goal line scramble. But, you know, confident this time round, then yeah, I think 3-0, comprehensive win to get our tournament underway.
All right, coming to you now, Stephen, as you said, if you picked up a point there against France, you wouldn't have really needed to win this coming match against Denmark. They did not put on an exactly inspiring performance, although Christian Eriksen always a threat. What do you think we're going to see in this one?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a bit of a tentative game. I think that we're going to see Australia come into it with that structure again. I think we're going to be a little bit more confident than we were going into the France game. I think we're going to see a little bit more expression, hopefully, in the final third of the pitch from Australia. But I do expect us to go out of the tournament in this game. I'm a bit of a pessimist, unfortunately. I do think hopefully we can pick up a draw, maybe a 1-1 draw or something like that. But that would still see us go out of the tournament if France were to beat Peru. So I'm hoping for an exciting game. I'm hoping for us to kind of go on the front foot, knowing now that we do kind of need a win realistically to stay in the tournament. I do actually wish that we were playing Peru in the next game, because I think that despite Peru's attacking flair, I think that we could probably scrape out a win against them. Whereas I think Denmark are probably a little bit more experienced in their ranks, a little bit more of that top echelon of talent. And I think that tends to show in these tense games.
And the scoreline for you?
I'd probably say a 1-0 draw.
That would be probably quite frustrating for you, but hopefully you can pull out the win for your sake. Guys, that will do it for us today. So if you'd like to tell the folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Yeah, you can always find me on Twitter at Stephen Clark CFC, where I talk about Chelsea and about Australia for the World Cup. And I'm also writing for the London is Blue podcast, guys.
Yeah, and you can follow me on Twitter, which is @_JamesVickers, where I tweet mainly about Preston North End and quite a lot of German football. And I also host the sister show's podcast, the Championship Roundtable. And you can follow us on Twitter @ChampionshipPod.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter @Kevroff. You can also find me over at Goal, where I write about their fantasy game. So be sure to check that out. Of course, the show you can find @EPL Roundtable. And as always, you can email us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.